Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Fantastic. So that link to Forests Without Frontiers will be down below. So welcome everyone again to the Ecology and Research Channel. Today we have our very special guest, Claire Vanderplank. And Claire is a facilitator, a wilderness guide at Weapons of Mass Creation. She is also a practitioner of both bodywork and shamanic healing. And she also teaches people about forming conscious partnerships with nature. So Claire, welcome again. I'll let you take it away. Have a fabulous presentation, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks, Alicia. Definitely like to express my gratitude for being able to be part of this conference. It's a beautiful global initiative, and yeah, what a movement it is really to have all these people around the world. I'd like to really acknowledge the local Indigenous people. I'm based in Perth or Fremantle in Western Australia, and it's the land of the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation. To orientate you a little bit more to my place and where I am, I'm sitting in my home looking out across my backyard. I've just shut my window because my chickens were starting to go off right on cue. I'm looking out at my garden and it's in full bloom. So we're right into mid-spring here. The weather's definitely changed. For the Noongar people, October, November, we have six seasons here in the southwest of Western Australia. And this season's Canberrang, which is that point in time when the heat really starts to return and the colours that the bush starts to express are like yellow and orange. And that tells us, yeah, that the heat's coming back. And I'm certainly noticing some of those colours in my backyard, but not obviously, but I have planted a lot of other flowers as well. So there's all kinds of colours going on. And beautifully, just the other day, I had a sacred kingfisher came and landed right just in my line of sight over here, which is the first time in 10 years of living here that I've seen one of those sacred kingfishers, which is both a beautiful thing and a blessing, but that kind of unique thing going on that doesn't fit the normal pattern does kind of both make me feel like, wow, this might be a really good healthy sign, and at the same time also makes me wonder why have they chose to come into the city area. So these are the kinds of things that, you know, I experience now sitting in this place. And in fact, I'm gonna show you. This little guy was in my front yard this morning. So this is a little baby pink and grey galah, and that's my eucalyptus tree. And one of my favourite things to do is watch these trees. It starts to get windy this time of year and they start to swirl around and make all kinds of patterns with their branches. But this little guy came to say hello. Great. Some other acknowledgements I want to do is not just acknowledge the Indigenous people whose land I'm on now, but also all Indigenous people, because when we're talking about this topic of embodying the patterns of nature, this is what, you know, they don't just get this stuff, they are this stuff. Meaning that Indigenous culture actually is a pure expression of the patterns of nature in their place. In fact, in one of the Aboriginal languages I recently read in this absolutely amazing book, Sand Talk, I recommend reading it. But the author wrote how in his native language, they don't have a word for culture. The closest interpretation of the word culture means to be like your place. So it's a beautiful, direct example of how we as humans and as people actually arise out of these patterns of nature. So I also want to acknowledge the fact that sometimes it can be difficult when we talk about these things like connecting with nature, anything in that realm, because how are we ever separate? You know, literally we are nature and we are an expression of it. So when I'm talking about embodying the patterns of nature, we of course already are doing that. What I'm really trying to get at is that we can embody those harmonious, generative patterns of nature. Whereas at the moment we tend to be doing probably a little bit too much of embodying the disruptive entropic patterns, which means entropy is a form of system which is in decline. And it's sort of my theory that we can be flipping the switch from being entropic to being generative. And that's our nature. That's its modus operandi. It's what it's kind of always running on. Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to acknowledge in acknowledging Indigenous people and how Indigenous culture is an expression of these patterns of nature is also that it's my deep belief that as non-Indigenous people, the more that we get that felt sense of nature deep in our bodies, the more we can then understand where that Indigenous culture is actually coming from, and from that place can be the true place of making reparations and being able to, you know, work together as one people on a land rather than a bunch of separate people. So I definitely wanted to bring that up. I'd definitely like to acknowledge my teachers, and number one being nature itself. I've been very blessed to be able to spend long periods of time out in nature, not only in Australia, but also North America, New Zealand and Borneo, and some other places, but those locations especially have been big teachers for me. And of course, my human teachers as well, and primarily my teacher from the way of nature, John P. Milton. So I want to say that up front. Now, to get into the guts of the talk, so Joseph Campbell, he was a pretty wise man. He definitely got this. So here's a quote from Joseph Campbell. He said, "The goal of life is to match your heartbeat with the beat of the universe, to match your nature with nature." That pretty much sums up this talk. And in fact, you know, my journey to starting to explore this line of thinking started from a very direct experience of just that, even though I was certainly not intending that this was going to happen. And even if I'd read this quote in advance, I'd have no idea of what was actually possible along these lines. So 8 years ago, in 2012, at the beginning of the year, I had a pretty bad accident where I got hit by a truck while I was on my bicycle. And that had left me, you know, I got away quite luckily without any big major damage. But it had done enough damage that it had put my system really out of whack and had ended up feeling very, very disconnected, which, just as an aside, ended up being a very big lesson about the role of the body and how that can help you or prevent you from feeling in deep connection. Anyway, I had gone into a very deep state of feeling very disconnected, and once I had that realization that I was so disconnected, it enabled then life to give me the experience of then going and going on the program with John Milton in the Way of Nature, kind of like a long version of a vision quest. So when we spend a week alone in one spot, but a guided experience. And within 3 or 4 days of that, I had started to hear like music in my sight. And I thought, well, that's a bit strange, because there's a big collection of us up along this valley, and, you know, the people down below knew that, you know, they were hosting us. They knew that there was a bunch of people out on quest up in this valley. And But I thought, oh, but it's lovely music. I'll enjoy it. You know, it seems so peaceful. And I couldn't really put my finger on it. I was like, oh, is this a Buddhist chant? No, not really. Is it like chanting music? That's what it sounded like. Is it maybe like an Aboriginal language? Maybe they have a chant in this area. Like, no, it's not quite that. I was like, I don't know, but I bet, because it's so soothing, I bet that, you know, it's probably in time with a human heartbeat. So I put my fingers on my pulse, and that's when I realized, oh, there's something going on here, because it wasn't just in time with a human heartbeat. This music that I was hearing was perfectly in time with my own heartbeat. And yeah, I can tell you that my life completely changed from that moment onwards. And I can kind of use that experience as a, you know, as an ongoing teaching moment, because when I look back and try to make sense of what was going on in that experience and in other things that happened both in that first quest and then since I've gone on to continue down that path, so many things that wouldn't have seemed possible and the worldview that I held before all that suddenly became this amazing magical inquiry to just what being a human and being alive on this planet could actually be like. So one of the things that these kinds of experiences have really guided me into is taking a very different view into how to come at these challenges that we face in modern life. I mean, obviously we're in, you know, the sixth mass extinction, and this is a very challenging thing both to come to grips with mentally, because it's so complex, just the range of system fragilities that are coming together at this point in time. But it's also very emotionally challenging, spiritually challenging, as well as just to cognitively get our heads around it. But I really feel like, well, it's good because people are realizing all their systems fragilities, there's more and more attention being placed on things like systems thinking and how do we do systems change? And, you know, let's try to understand how complex adaptive systems work. But one of the things that strikes me is that, like, there's a lot of talking heads on this, in this kind of systems change thing. And a, you know, big problem that strikes me is that if we don't learn to embody those principles of living systems, is that we're going to keep repeating, even if our mind thinks we really, really understand it, we're going to keep repeating these destructive patterns into any sort of systems design work that we do. So my hypothesis really for today, and this is sort of a hypothesis that has come out through my lived experience, so this is the research channel, so I'll put a little sort of academic kind of words in sometimes. So it's like an inductive hypothesis, meaning that I've had a felt sense that this might be true, and now I go about exploring it in my life and my work. My hypothesis is that a cognitive attempt to understand the principles of living systems is not enough, and that we must allow the patterns of nature to permeate every level of our being. And another way of saying that is that as we embody nature's generative patterns, we become an expression of these life-giving patterns just through our actions without needing to think about it. So through embodying the patterns of nature, we can start to do this generative healing work independent of the need to work it out with our minds, which is not to say that, you know, using our amazing awareness and our minds to then reflect on what's going on is not useful, because it really is. And in fact, I think the second stage of embodying, being from direct embodiment into action in the world, which to me is another form of embodiment, we do actually need to use our minds, which is really the body mind, in that process as well. So it's a piece of the puzzle, this direct embodiment, but I think it's sometimes missed or not given enough attention. So what we're going to cover today is I'll go over in more detail what I really mean by the patterns of nature. You know, language is a very imprecise way of working with these kinds of concepts, but I'll give it my best shot. And then we'll go into what do I mean by actually embodying these patterns. I want to make sure that we thoroughly cover what does that mean to embody on a personal level. And I'd love if we get into the territory of what does it mean to embody these patterns collectively, because this is where I think it really needs to go from a focus on the individual and personal cultivation, but at some point in time that needs to click in to the collective. So we may get that far, or maybe I'll just leave you with a few breadcrumbs and we can continue the conversation further down the line. So I also want to point out for the session that in a way, like what I'm talking about is really simple, because it is just because we are nature already. The simplicity in that is that it's just getting back to the essence of who we are as humans. I like to say that nature sort of helps us just get back to our factory settings. So in a sense, it's very simple, but we, you know, to be able to really understand it, I might use some complex terminology. And so that's where use the Q&A box, because I'd love to be able to keep track of where everyone is at with what I'm talking about, and do my best to make sure that I haven't just utterly confused everybody. So I'd really love if you leave the session today, or whenever you're watching this, feeling really excited and empowered to go out and start to go down this path of consciously bringing nature into and through your bodies. And I'd also love to leave you with that feeling of like, and why is that significant, and how does that link and relate to our collective task of getting our human societal civilizational systems back into a pattern that's in harmony with our living environment. That sounds good. So what do I mean by patterns of nature? So really, the patterns of nature at the most basic level, to me, they're like the order in the energetic vibrations of the universe. You know, we know that even matter is a bit of an illusion. It's just a different way that we perceive different forms of energy. So in a certain sense, everything's just energy, and there's order in that energy, and in that order we can perceive patterns. An interesting thing and an important thing when you're sort of trying to contemplate and get a deeper feel for all this is that all these patterns were set in place at the Big Bang, if you prescribe to that theory, but it seems like it's possibly the best one we've got at the moment. So they don't change. So in a way, these patterns are truth. And it's why you'll hear in Indigenous cultures, they'll talk about the law of the land, or some people will talk about universal law. I like to call it natural law, because when we adhere to these patterns, and in that, you know, the need to adhere, that's why it could be called law, that results in systems that we're a part of that are in coherence. So we're in reciprocal and mutually beneficial relationships with everything around us when we embody these patterns. And as these patterns express from pure energy into what we perceive as ordinary reality, that's when we can start to see those patterns in living systems. So for example, that's when we could be out in nature and start to notice, oh, when that tree's flowering, that's when there's enough fish that are at maturity that we could start perhaps harvesting those fish. And you hear those kinds of ways of a deep knowing of place through Indigenous societies, and that's a key part of how they manage to maintain themselves as sustainable cultures. I'm just going to show you another image. This one. So you've seen probably lots of similar things to this before, where you'll notice the same patterns showing up all over the place. So for example, here we have a human fingerprint on one side and a tree ring on the other. And we'll also see that those examples in everything from, you know, why do we call a kidney bean a kidney? Because a kidney bean, because it looks like a kidney. And lo and behold, more holistic medical systems will think that's good for your kidneys, carrots are good for your eyes. If you slice them in half, they look like an eyeball. You know, the very top branches of a tree are like the capillaries or the very fine pathways in our lungs. I just forgot what they're called. But so we see those patterns repeating in not only our own bodies, but across all of nature. The another key thing about the patterns of nature is generativity. So this is a this seems like maybe a kind of overly complicated aside, but one of the things that when we understand how nature's trying to function is that it's always moving towards more greater and greater levels of ordered complexity. So as you know, this is sort of what evolution has been doing, to use, you know, kind of more mainstream language. But the types of processes that natural systems are a part of, the one that life is always working towards is generativity. So what that really is telling us is that life is always trying to increase life, which for me, once I've actually embodied that and felt that, well, I'm working on embodying it even more, but once I have a sense of it in my own body, that's when I can have a deep trust in natural processes. Because if life is always working to increase life, to a certain extent, we just need to get out of the way. And to a certain extent, it also means that if we can get to our most fundamental human nature, we can also trust that that nature is not inherently destructive, because we are an expression of the earth. And so basic human nature is actually to also support all of life as well. Another thing that tells us that these patterns are really significant to humans is our experience of beauty. So, you know, you can see things like music, how we love music, and you might hear musicians talk about, oh, I just needed to get out of the way and I was just picking up on the rhythms and the tune, the melodies that were already there, and I'm just letting that come through me. Now, I want to read you a quote. I've missed who this quote was from. I've just popped it in my notes and not written that down. I'm good at stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure it's from Robin Wall Kimmerer, who has this most beautiful book, Raiding Sweetgrass, who I would, and that's another book I'd really recommend reading if you love this stuff. But she, I think it was she, wrote a beautiful passage on beauty where she said, "Beauty reflects the underlying order, rhythms, and design of the universe. And in the infinite varieties and forms of beauty, the universal consciousness expresses infinite facets of itself. How to explain otherwise the astounding excesses of beauty in nature, way beyond the needs of continuity and evolution? Nature sings beauty, and the soul of every living thing sings back." I just love that. It also kind of means that the more we get in tune with these patterns, like, it's a joyful life that we can live. And I know for me personally, like, I constantly use practices to get me more in tune with these patterns, because it's just pleasurable and enjoyable. And it brings me back to that sense of everything's okay, because those patterns tell me that life is still working to express itself and working to support the rest of life along the way. How are we all doing there? If you want to add some comments down there. Aww. Great, thanks. Yeah, and keep putting your questions in the Q&A, and after this next little section, I'll get to some of the questions at the top. So what does embodying the patterns actually mean? So for us personally, at the most fundamental level, embodying the patterns is an energetic endeavor, because as I said, at the most fundamental level, these patterns are energy. So embodying the patterns of nature means to become more energetically complex, just like the patterns that we see in nature, fluid as well, because there's never any stagnation, and integrous. It means that we are embodying the full range of the primordial forces, like the elements or the stages of the cycle of life. And I love to use the tool of contemplating the directions as a way to think about all these different qualities that are emerging from the energies of nature all the time. Taoism is a great source of wisdom on how to, like, what this is all about, and then also how to go about it. For them, their version of enlightenment wasn't to sort of escape this reality, which is ultimately suffering. They took great pleasure in actually just being here and being a part of it. So the goal for them, rather than being enlightenment, but the goal was to become a fully integrated human. And to me, that really speaks to that energetic aspect, because to be fully integrated, it's not just yourself. I'm integrated with all the parts of myself as a separate individual, but it means that I'm completely integrated in my place. So the energies of nature around me flow through me, and I'm in constant exchange with my place and my environment. And in the lineage that I run these wilderness quests in, the Way of Nature, we do Qigong. So we do focus on a lot of energy cultivation as part of the essential practice. And I've noticed, like, some of the earlier opening experiences for me were for doing things like practicing Qigong and being able to feel the vibration of the flowers that I was practicing in front of, sort of within me and in my body, or the mountain that I was meditating with, feeling its depth and its solidity and its groundedness in myself, not just thinking that this is what it might be like to be the mountain, or doing a direction ceremony, like I said, and stopping to feel the quality of each direction. There's another pattern of nature. It's springtime and there's bugs everywhere. So if I wave across my face, it's just some actual insect friends, not anything else. And it makes a big difference once you can embody the patterns of nature this way. Like, and one of the ways that Taoism uses it, of course, is using a lot of nature metaphors and translating that into wisdom teachings. So another quote is, if you realize all things change, there is nothing you will try to hold on to. And that's something that, you know, before I got into all this, I would have thought, oh, you know, sounds great. Yeah, makes sense. But I didn't really get that just moment by moment letting go until I did, you know, first long solo. So that's one sort of, you know, benefit that we can get from doing this embodiment, is actually all these sort of cliched terms that we think we kind of know what they mean, but once we get a visceral sense for it, we go, oh, it's really true. So we can embody the patterns of nature at this fundamental energetic level, and we can also embody it by living it. So like I said before, that's sort of part of what it takes to be in integrity, is not just kind of have these practices for ourselves personally, but it's what actions do we then take with our bodies. So that might be, in our life practice, letting go of excessive control. You know, maybe it's balancing the yin and yang qualities within ourselves. Grow a garden, have your daily routines match the rhythms and the cycle of the day. So rather than staying up super late and waking up late, syncing our daily routines with the world around us, those are ways to start to bring some of the actions into practice. And the benefits for us, I mean, obviously there's direct links for health and development of consciousness, but as you might have guessed, that, you know, my focus is more on what are the benefits like for the rest of life. So it's got big implications for anybody working directly with ecosystems, and I'd argue that, you know, that sort of means all of us, because we all are in place. You know, so my hypothesis goes, the more we embody it, the more we can just get a direct sense for these, the systems of nature that we're interacting with. So the more we embody these patterns, we can develop eco-literacy, meaning that we can sense what's healthy, as well as picking out systems disruptions. So you know, begin to run like partnering with nature workshops for organizations who do a lot of work in ecosystem restoration and protection. So it's also then it's a vehicle for understanding complexity, because those patterns of nature are complex adaptive systems. And so therefore we learn to get a sense for how complex systems work just by embodying those patterns. And it's difficult to get, I tried to do some research into what's the latest in cognitive science that tells us that this is true. And it's sort of the direction that it's moving in. So I won't get too technical, but the fields of cognitive science, like embodied cognition or haptic cognition theories, which talk about how our neural networks really are extending out into our environment, and that there's knowledge not just about relationships, but there's knowledge in relationship. And so what that means is that as we embody these patterns, we start to get a, like, we can feel truth. We can feel in our systems how things are going, and maybe start to get a sense of how are those patterns expressing, so that we can more accurately predict and intervene in a system. And it's not just like the environment out there, humans themselves are also complex adaptive systems. So if your work's not directly with the environment, this still is actually relevant for you as well. And also, you know, we want to do it like quite simply, not just so that we can have personal benefit to ourselves and our work, but also because at some point we need to be able to do it collectively, you know, with integrity. So I'd be curious to know from you, what other applications do you see for this kind of thing in your own life? And while, if you have a thought on that, while you're writing that down, I will just read a quote from Lao Tzu, because I've mentioned Taoism a lot. And this is sort of one of the fundamental quotes in the Tao Te Ching. Returning to source is stillness, which is the way of nature. The way of nature is unchanging. Knowing constancy is insight. So that is really getting to the fact that there are these fundamental patterns which are not, they're expressing change, but those principles remain unchanging. So the way of nature is unchanging. And knowing constancy is insight. So when we get a sense for those patterns, we can then have insight and wisdom into what's going on in the world. So let me have a look. Have you got any? Oh, I've got some questions, which I'll get to at the end. Oh, well, hopefully we'll get some more comments and insight into applications as we go along. I definitely want to make sure that we have time for getting into some practice. Oh, feels more gratitude and sense of awe. Yes, that's beautiful. It's very true. And that's so life enriching when we feel those things. So how we can do it? I mean, obviously, just getting out into nature is a really big part of it. Just taking our energetic system and placing it out there in the energy of hopefully nature in a relatively healthy state, the process of entrainment, where the vibration of one thing starts to entrain the vibration of another into being in the same rhythm and pulses. Just like grandfather clocks, if you put them all in one room, they all start ticking in time. Well, that the same effect happens on our systems when we go out into nature as well. It definitely does help. And, you know, this is part of the learning through going out and doing quests for myself, but then also, you know, holding that space for other people. It does make a difference how we go out there. So our intention with that really does make a difference. So if we can go out into nature in a very reverent way, but also with playfulness and openness and making sure that we're not distracted, which is, you know, why an essential part of a quest is you stay in one spot so that you go deeper and deeper and deeper into that one place. That will really, you know, help to charge that practice. But of course, there's also, you know, specific practices that can help. And I really like to emphasize practices that uses our senses with an open awareness. And we're going to do a practice now, which will be a listening meditation. But it's kind of like, you know, if you've ever stood in front of a body of water, like at the ocean, and the first pattern you might see is the waves coming towards you, you notice that there's a rhythm. And maybe if you're a bit higher up, you start to get a sense of the sets coming in. But then if you actually, once you relax a little bit more and stay undistracted from the water, you might start to see that not only are there the waves and the sets of the waves, but there's also the current that might be moving underneath the water, and that creates a different kind of pattern. And then there's the wind maybe blowing across the surface, and that's going to create a whole different set of patterns. And so the practice is to use our senses to allow those patterns to emerge onto the screen of our consciousness, and that's when we can start to get a felt sense inside of ourselves as to what those patterns are. So 1:30, okay, just checking our time. All right, so hopefully you have just maybe a little bit of nature around you. So if you do, or even if you don't, because like I said, humans are nature as well, and there's actually something to learn from listening to human landscapes too. But you can just close your eyes. I'm going to do it as well. And the trick with this one is to not try to get our consciousness out there and to picking out, okay, oh, that sounds a light truck moving down the street, but try to just let the sounds come to your eardrum without labeling it. So we're staying very neutral and just letting the sounds come to you. Not trying to pick out one particular sound. Just do a quick scan and making sure that you're paying attention to sounds coming from all directions. Paying attention to sounds that are quite close to you. Then allowing your awareness to move out a little bit further into sounds that are just that little bit further away. And then paying attention to sounds that are right at the edge of your ability to pick them up. Really feeling yourself sitting at the center of the soundscape, the sphere of sound all around you to every direction. And then allowing your awareness to start to draw itself in closer and closer to your body until you find your awareness back at yourself again. And then you can open your eyes. Nice. Slightly, well, not quite as lovely to do as when you're, you know, sitting outside and completely immersed with the sounds of nature, but hopefully perhaps you got a little bit of a sense of that as well. So if you manage to do that practice and have anything to note about it, feel free to put it in the chat box. what people, you know, often report doing that is both for a start is very calming and very relaxing, which is sort of one of the prerequisites to be able to open yourself to the energies of nature. So just to do that practice, even as a centering and arriving practice, is a really lovely thing. But also people usually comment on things like, oh, I've been here for a while. I can't believe I wasn't noticing that sound. Or they start to pick up on events happening in the landscape. So birds are really great for that. Like often you can hear, you know, one bird might make a loud noise, but it's usually not then just one bird, because that's the alarm of a bird, which then sets off other birds. For me, I love to, as you start sinking into it, to get a sense of, especially, you know, how the wind moves across the landscape, and you really, rather than just, oh, I'm hearing wind, like, you know, that's wind, a unidirectional kind of thing, starting to get the sense of the shape that that wind's taking as it floats across the landscape. Sometimes I even get the sense of, like, you know, air moving high above me, and I'm not actually quite sure if I'm even hearing those different layers of the wind moving, or I'm feeling it somehow. Or I might start to get like a visual, the sense of a visual landscape just through the experience of sound, which is a very unusual thing. But that's a beautiful practice to do. And yeah, like someone's just put in the chat box, it's also really amazing if you can't get out into nature to then, yeah, use the sounds of of natural settings, because it does, it, you know, those, the sensory environment of nature in a healthy state, that's what our sensory systems evolved to respond to. And so it's really, we react in our bodies differently. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, I mean, I love to hear the bird chorus where I am in the city, but it's very different to when I'm out in the bush. So I notice, like, when I'm in the bush, even though there might be some birds that are louder, it still is completely in harmony, like it's one big orchestra of birds in the morning. Whereas in the city, there's often really like squawky loud ones, and they just completely dominate the soundscape. And as someone mentioned on a workshop recently, they used the term intrusive, which I thought was a really great way to describe it. Like they sort of intrude into the soundscape. And that's a signal that that's not a system that is in a complete equilibrium, even though it's a dynamic equilibrium, there's always change in nature. But that's a system in coherence when you have that, oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I get you, Noella. I'm also quite auditorily sensitive as well. Yeah, I need to pay a lot of attention to the sorts of soundscapes I immerse myself in too. Oh, yes. Look, I've got a little bit of time to talk about the embodying it collectively, not just personally, but I'm just going to check the questions about my tattoo. That's a very good question. Moving to the wilderness, this is from Noella, moving in the wilderness is not a realistic option for me right now. So how do we turn artificial into natural without just the imagination? That's a really, really good question. It definitely can be challenging, but what I've found through my own practice is that the more that I can not, the more I can allow the sounds to move across the screen of my awareness and not react to them, the more I can start to see the patterns actually in the artificial as well, which is quite challenging. It is quite challenging, like you said, when you're sensitive sensorially. It can be difficult not to just immediately kind of react to it, but that's definitely something that helps, is keeping the practice of not of not getting engaged, which is sort of like the essence of a meditation practice. And the other thing, you know, I do for myself is rather than practice the open awareness all the time, is making sure I'm giving myself little kind of moments, micro moments throughout the day where I hone into where nature is expressing in that generative pattern. So rather than taking in the whole cityscape, you know, I'll go out into my backyard, for example, where even though I live on a relatively busy street, I'm focusing more on like what's actually happening in my garden. And I know that Claire Dunn, who's another Australian, she did a talk a couple of days ago on rewilding in an urban landscape. And, you know, she's going to have answered that question a lot more comprehensively than I am right now. But to know that, you know, life is still always trying to express itself all the time, even in an urban landscape. And the more we start to be able to notice and pick up on that pattern of life just going about and doing life, I know that for me personally, that's how I kind of get my respite. Like, I'm a nature person. It's what I do, like, for work. Sometimes I go out into the city. Like, I had to go out to a networking thing last night and I felt like a wild animal being put in some weird situation. It was it was amusing, actually. but there's always, all around me all the time, there's still ways that I can tune into, well, this is kind of life happening. And also to note that, you know, I do like to get into the theory of it, but it's also about realizing that, well, how could, and contemplating this question, how could humans, as they're exhibiting this current disruptive pattern, how could that be part of a bigger cycle? And we always see that, you know, in nature, the patterns are disorganization before reorganization. And so I definitely, you know, for me, it gives me some sort of like existential kind of solace. And then realizing that even though humans, as they're expressing now, are not necessarily particularly helpful or healthy, like for the rest of the world out there, that there is probably some greater intelligence to it as well. And I could go into the philosophy around all that a lot longer, but I won't, because we'll try to just finish off with this last bit about collective systems. But yeah, I love that. Thanks. So obviously we got to start personally, because if we're not embodying the patterns of nature individually, we're not really going to be able to do it collectively with any sort of integrity. However, at some point we need to switch our focus into the collective, because like we're just talking about, it becomes much more difficult for us personally if then the systemic is not reflecting that as well. And moreover, in terms of what we're doing on the planet right now, we need to stop acting as if we're an apex predator, which is kind of what we're doing. We're sort of like, we can go and we have power, we'll do what we like, and oh, I guess we can take into account that that's bad for us if we chop down that forest, you know, and somehow we've always got to make it relevant to humans. But really, we've broken what would normally happen in a natural system, where apex predators, their power is kept in check by the fact that if that predator goes and eats too much of its prey, then the predator's got nothing to eat. And so even though they might seem like they're the most powerful, actually there's a power symmetry at play through the coupling of the relationship between, for example, predator and prey. Humans have gone and got too powerful because of our technology, and that's really decoupled us from our environment. And we've kind of broken that law, which means, and this is not just our shadow side, but it's also our gift. And you'll hear a common thread across Indigenous cultures that humans are the custodial species. And that's because we do have that gift of being able to intervene at a whole systems level. So for example, for the Noongar people here where I am, their story says that humans are the carers of everything. And I believe that that's not only true in the sense of that's the purpose that we have evolved and expressed into life. But that story is then also really, really important for us to keep ourselves in check and to remember that we need to care for everything. And remember that, you know, what I was saying about generative patterns in nature, that life is always trying to support life. This is what being a carer for everything means. So we got to live as nature itself and live that generative pattern and use our gifts as this custodial species that has the ability to obtain a whole system awareness. And we kind of need to work together to do that. It's not just up to one person to do it all. We're also here to work together. But that's really kind of our challenge. And I get very heartened when I see people being able to bring those patterns of nature into the systems that they're designing, as well as, you know, as our culture seeks to heal and repair itself, we're getting closer and closer back to what nature would do. But for example, you know, technology has both been such a massive driver of this decoupling of our relationships, but it's also been, it needs to be something that we harness and build in these generative patterns into our tech. So for example, there's a distributed technology called Holochain, and I'm not a tech person, so I'm not actually going to go and explain this in total. But we're in a conversation with one of the founders of Holochain, that's actually when I went, oh my God, like this application of the patterns of nature is incredible, because he was describing how Holochain was built on the way that water flows, for example, and how they think about currencies. So a current, and this is how water flows, and you know. And I went, oh my God, because, you know, nature uses a gifting economy and it's all about flow. And so getting that example helped for me put the piece of the puzzle together. Of, yeah, these patterns of nature, we've got to do it. And there are actually living examples now of people getting in sync with that and then starting to put that into their systems. And then, of course, you know, culturally, if we can get there, you know, if we were able to then express these patterns of nature through us individually and then into society, we'd be seeing, you know, cultures where power was much more distributed, and already in small pockets, you'll see organizations with distributed leadership. Obviously, we'll be seeing a lot more cooperation and not just competition. And I think, like, you know, especially this year with COVID, we've seen such a strong impulse to get back to what we know is really essential. And you know, I don't know about you, but more and more reason just to give up on this kind of global capitalist system and get back to the local and get back to supporting each other, not because, you know, we have to, but because we actually really want to. But yeah, that collective embodiment's a very big picture conversation, but I hope you get a sense of it through that.
Fantastic. So,
yeah,
I was wondering if you wanted to. I know we're getting a little short on time. I'm just wondering if there's anything that you're seeing, particularly in the Q&A, that you'd like to answer as one final question.
Oh, well, someone's asked me about, do I have any book recommendations on that? I don't know if you saw it, so I'll type it in the answer. Sand Talk, Tyson Yunkaporta.
Fabulous. I think books are always an incredible resource.
This is this book is like literally the first example I've seen of not just an Indigenous person being able to share their culture and tell us stories about their culture, but actually using that Indigenous cultural lens to then go and examine the world around us. Yeah, it's amazing.
Any others that you would put on that list for folk?
Gosh, Braiding Sweetgrass, I already mentioned. My mind's probably going blank.
That's okay. We are gonna come back here for one final question. Our lovely pet host is putting all those book recommendations in the chat, the ones that she heard, which is fabulous. So folks, we're just gonna do a quick wrap up here. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ecology and Research Channel. I do want to let folks know, if they're really enjoying all this content, we do have another session coming up. It's called How Can We Forget Our Body? And it's about a search for the origin of disembodiment with Alina Roeder. So please feel free to come back and join us for that. In the meantime, there is a coffee break available, which is a great way to connect, meet community, as well as the Facebook group for the Ecology and Research Channel, as well as the Facebook group for the Embodiment Conference as a whole. And there's so much to take in. I know I was taking a lot of notes in the session, found it really empowering and exciting, which is always a great feeling. And it's definitely a session I want to come back to. It is going to be available for 48 hours. So please do check that out. You can also upgrade. So upgrade to purchase the whole channel or even purchase the whole conference. You can also make a donation to our charity partner for the channel, Forest Without Frontiers. It really wouldn't be possible to have a channel in ecology and research without having such an incredible sponsor partner. Claire, you've been amazing. But one final question before we let you go. What is your top tip for embodiment?
Well, pretty obviously, I'm going to say partner with nature for your embodiment cultivation, because nature will restore your factory settings.
Fantastic. There's so much love and thank yous coming into the chat. Yeah, people are curious about more of your book list. So please do check out, this video is going to be live in the Facebook TEC Ecology and Research Channel. Claire, I don't know if you mind going in later and putting in some of those recommendations.
I'll go look at my bookshelf.
Yeah, people are really curious. Fabulous. We put your website down as well, so people, folks know how to connect with you. Yeah, Ken, so much love. People are saying thank you. It's amazing. I think so too. I think it was exactly what you aimed for. And we appreciate you being here with us.
Cool. Thank you so much. Thanks to everyone for coming.
Awesome. Awesome. So much energy and love. Thank you, everyone.